Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Tuesday, March 4th. I'm Ray Graff. Rich Guthrie is back today to pump up the avian jams, lay down a winged groove, and share his birding knowledge information with you. If you have a question about the birds, give us a call. 800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551 if you have a birding question, or you can email us at voxpop@wamc.org, voxpop@wamc.org, or 800-348-2551. If you find yourself interested in our winged friends, please feel free to call, and we'll start the show right after the news. Hello again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. We're discussing birds today, and we welcome back our buddy Rich Guthrie. Rich is retired from the New York State DEC and is the regional reviewer for the premier birding site, eBird. Julie Hart, our other guest, is a late scratch today, so it's all Rich all the time. If you have a question today for Rich Guthrie, give us a call at 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551, or you can email us at voxpop@wamc.org. Rich Guthrie is on the phone. He's somewhere far away. Rich, can you hear me?
Hey, Ray, good afternoon. Yeah, sure. Hear you very loud and clear.
How are you, sir?
I'm doing great. Super duper.
Well, listen, here's one. I got this email yesterday afternoon, and Dawn was very nice. Dawn said to me, here is my original question that goes all the way back to November 2024. Please put it on the show tomorrow. So you see, Rich, it's only been 4 or 5 months that I've been forgetting it. But today is Dawn's day. Hey, this is Dawn's question. I observed today, of course in November, a mallard ducks, both male and female, diving. With only the naked eye, I thought we had some diving ducks stop by the pond, but when I grabbed the binoculars, I watched mallards. They dove under and emerged the distance away, just like diving ducks. According to Google, it's not a common occurrence, but I was not the only one to comment online. Anyway, first time for me and interesting. Have you ever seen this behavior? The pond is only a few feet deep, probably lower due to our lack of rain, so perhaps they are feeding differently? And that, again, goes back to November, and it's from our friend Dawn.
Well, yes, Dawn, and thank you for that. Yeah, mallard ducks and some of the other so-called dabbling ducks, or puddle ducks as they're called, do actually dive. The black duck, the American black duck, is another one very closely related to the mallard, and they too will dive. And you know where I especially see them diving, not only in still water like your pond, but also where there are ripples and currents in water, and they will dive under the ripples and feed just like some of the other diving ducks after whatever goodies they find along the stream bed. So, yeah. They do, on occasion, dive. I've actually seen Canada geese diving as well. It's a strange natural world out there, and they're doing their thing as best they can.
All right, I'm trying to clear up my clear lack of competence in the email front here. Here's another one that goes back a ways. This one's from Matt. Matt's subject heading, bird vision. I was wondering if birds can see colors. What parts of the visible and non-visible spectrum do they see? And do some birds see different wavelengths than others? I guess some also have distance vision that's more acute than others? Question mark. And that's question one from Matt. And since I neglected his email last time or 2 months ago, he has a second one. But let's talk about vision first. What colors can birds see?
Well, Matt, you hit on one of my favorite topics, and yes, indeed, birds have extremely acute visual senses and also can see beyond our visual spectrum. They see infrared, ultraviolet, and who knows what else out there. For all we know, they may be watching the radio waves and listening to us as visually going through the airwaves.
Oh.
Well, that's a stretch, Ray. I'm
right.
Just kidding on
okay.
That one. But they do have an incredible acuity. Not only the eyes of the eagle or the hawk eye of the hawk, but also your common pigeon and chicken have extremely acute vision. And then I will watch a flock of pigeons, let's say, and if I see several of them turning their heads skyward, looking up, I will look up. And sometimes I can pick out that little speck in the sky, and sure enough, there's a hawk soaring way, way, way up overhead.
Aha.
They can spot those things, and it's a good thing they can, because their life depends on it.
Well, it's Birds Today with Rich Guthrie. Julie Hart couldn't make it today, but we'll be back next month. Matt goes on. And again, usually it's one to a customer, but because I've been negligent with some of these emails, and in fairness, and you know, we get a lot of them. And so sometimes they can't all get in. But it is my fault, and I take full blame. Matt continues, an unrelated question. Recently, I've been putting bird seed out on the porch and considering some of the feeding frenzy I sometimes see, depending on the weather. I'm curious as to how long a bird can go without eating. I see mainly smaller ones, chickadees, nuthatches, sparrows, titmice, a few cardinals. How do they find food if everything is snow-covered and it's well below freezing? And that's from Matt.
Good question. Very good question, Matt. And it is a critically important question to for us to understand. Birds need, depending on their metabolism rate, they'll need to refuel every so often, and it varies from species to species, generally related to the size of the bird and their activity level.
Yeah.
A sedentary, let's say, grouse can feed and go for a while without a meal. But the hummingbird and the warbler need to constantly be finding food, and sometimes they have to store it up for long-distance migration. The black pole warbler, for example, tiny little bird, maybe about, not very big, smaller than a sparrow.
Size of a thimble?
Will take off and pardon?
Size of a thimble?
Bigger than a thimble.
Okay.
Let's say the length of the width of your hands with the fingers spread out.
That's okay.
A little tiny bird will take off from Nova Scotia or Cape Cod or Southern Long Island and fly nonstop overnight, overday, overnight, down into South America, the Caribbean islands in between if they can find one. But they have to go all that time and distance without eating. So they have to build up that reserve in the terms of body fat, which is a lot of extra baggage to be carrying, but they wear it off on the way down. Other birds like hawks can feed maybe once a day, find a good meal, but then they better be ready the next morning to be out there finding another good meal.
Yeah.
Which is why many, many hawks, before they develop that hunting skill, may not make it through their first year. It's a very tough life.
You know, and again, this has nothing to do with the feeding, but you mentioned birds going into the Caribbean islands, and these little birds fly a long way over water. How do they do it without stopping? Presumably, they can't land on the ocean and take a rest.
You're right, and they cannot. And that's a critical factor in the bird population viability. And because so many birds don't make it, they actually don't. You know, there was a very interesting study. Here I am on the Gulf of Mexico.
Now, wait a minute. Are you sure that you have the name of that right?
Yeah, I'm correct. I'm looking right out there, and it is.
Okay.
Anyway, the birds fly up from the Yucatan Peninsula in Mexico over the Gulf and into Florida. And that long distance, many of them quite simply don't make it. I mean, they get exhausted. They run into headwinds or foul with the weather. And they end up falling and just simply going down into the water. An interesting study by these brilliant kids. I've got to be amazed with their skills. Did a study on the sharks in the Gulf of Mexico, where they caused them to release their stomach contents. How they did that, I don't know. Maybe they stuck a finger down their throat.
Oh,
I don't
great.
Know.
Great. Thanks, Rich.
Yes, right. But they did it. Never mind. And they found out that these sharks are feeding on songbirds that don't make it across the Gulf. They skim the surface of the water and picking up these little warblers and tanagers and orioles. It's kind of, you know, very, very sad.
Yeah.
But it's a natural phenomenon. The birds have to, and this is why it's so critically important to save the habitat for their nesting up here so that they can replenish their numbers to make that arduous journey. to South America over the ocean nonstop and back again to keep the species viable. So many things involved, so much involved, and we're part of it.
Rich Guthrie's our guest today. It's Birds, 800-348-2551. If you want to talk birds with Rich Guthrie, Julie Hart will be back with us next month. The email address is voxpop@wamc.org. You know, Rich, March 1st was Saturday, and I was taking the air with the wife, and we were hanging out just on the patio. It was kind of a nicer day than we've had. And there were the geese and big flocks, big V's going across the sky. And
yippee!
It's
yippee.
Like, and then we realized it was like a switch being thrown. There was so much more bird noise in our little neighborhood. It's amazing. What's coming back besides geese?
Well, the real harbinger. People like to think of the robin as a sign of spring, but the real harbinger in our area. New York and New England is the red-winged blackbird. And nowadays, even the turkey vulture. These are the two front runners in the return of birds to our area early spring. The red-winged blackbird are arriving now. They'll tee up on territory and start singing their beautiful song. Well, beauty to the eye of the beholder, or the ear. And the turkey vulture soaring overhead. Two big signs of spring has come, plus the Canada geese, the harbingers of spring, and followed by some of the other early arrivals will be the killdeer. Listen for the killdeer, and the eastern phoebe will be the adventurous ones will be returning at their own peril because, you know, we still have some weather to look forward to. And sometimes it's not kind to these little birds.
You know, and one more question, and then we'll hit the phones. 800-348-2551. Regarding these geese, so they make a lot of racket. You can probably imitate a goose, but, you're on vacation, and I'm not going to ask you to do that. But they go over, and you can't miss them. And then I'm watching one group go over, and they're gone. And then a moment or two after they're out of my view and out of my ear range, there comes one. And he's honking away. And so is this analogous to the birds that drop dead and become shark food in the Caribbean? In other words, just one bird that's not quite equipped to make it with the flock and that's going to be gone?
Well, that could be reasons for it slowing down. Or it could be a late joiner. It could have been, hanging out in a cornfield someplace and forgot to set the alarm. Then when it woke up, everybody was gone. So he's trying to play catch up.
Yeah.
But I think you're right, Ray. I think it's the laggard, the one that the lion catches, one that you got to run fast, but a little faster than the last one in line.
All right, let's go to our phones, and it's Shauna. Shauna, where are you calling from?
Hello there, Rich. It's so nice to have you back.
Okay, welcome.
Well, thank you.
Yes. You were talking about the red-winged blackbirds, and for about 30 years, I have been keeping track of when they return. I live in Alpoise, and they came back on Friday. It's like every red-winged blackbird in the world shows up at once, and my record-keeping shows that there is always one more snowfall of at least an inch after they come back to town, so... Don't put your shovels away yet.
Don't say it. Ouch.
Hey, I didn't
well,
say
I like
it. The Redmond Blackbird said it.
I
don't have my notebook with me. I'm sorry, what?
No, go ahead. I'd love to hear it.
Okay. I don't have my notebook with me, but the return dates range from mid-February to mid-April. So there's quite a window there.
Mm-hmm. There is. And I'm just wondering if you don't.
And the other thing
is a chance.
Go ahead, Rich.
Yeah, if you get a chance, Shauna, if you get a chance, if you could plot that out on a graph somehow, and share it with me, I'd love to see the occurrences over the course of those 40 years. Remarkable. And
30. About
and just
30.
Have a snapshot of the changes of events, if any.
Interesting. Great idea. 30 years of records. That's
yes,
pretty good.
I would be happy to do that.
Well, this is a
excellent.
Great time.
And then the only other thing I wanted to say is that today I was walking along the Mohawk River and I saw the male common mergansers.
Oh,
I see
beautiful.
The females all the time, but the males aren't always around. So there were three of them today.
Excellent. Good job. Yeah. And they, you know, common merganser is a duck. And they're not so common some places, but that's the name we give them. But they are a duck that dives and catches fish. And they have a special beak that's lined with teeth. Not really teeth, but serrated edges of their beak to hold the slippery fish when they catch it. You know, it's not easy to catch a fish. You don't want to lose it. But so the mergansers as a group have this tooth-like structures along the edge of their beak to hold on to the fish that they catch.
I'll be darned. All right, Shauna, thanks a lot. We're going to let you roll there. Rich Guthrie, we got to take a break here. 800-348-2551 is the number. It's birds. It's a Rich Guthrie solo appearance. Ain't you lucky? Here's a little Coleman Hawkins for you. Half step down, please. There's Coleman Hawkins with some help from Dizzy Gillespie on trumpet. The number here is 800-348-2551. Rich Guthrie joins me today for the Bird Show. Julie Hart is a late scratch, and we'll be here next time when we do the show in April. All right, Rich, a couple emails, and then we'll go to Amsterdam and then go back to the phones in earnest. This one's from JF. How rare is the eastern bluebird? I've lived in the Northeast my whole life, but I've only seen one twice, the second time being yesterday at our feeder. So, how rare is it?
Well, it depends on where you are, but most of our listening area, they're not rare at all. But it's just a matter of looking to where they are and recognizing them when you see them. Bluebirds really aren't blue. They are kind of like a dark brown color, but with a certain angle of sunlight hitting them, the refraction makes them appear to be blue. And so when you're looking at them in the wrong light, they'll appear just like any other dark bird on a wire. But a ride through the countryside on a country road, knowing what to look for, you might see a dozen bluebirds in a good day.
Okay.
And also, your chances are better if there are bluebird nest boxes nearby, preferably around your house, but otherwise in the neighborhood. Open fields with scattered trees and a place for them to perch, other good places to look for them. So, yes, the bluebirds are in our area. And thanks to a lot of people who put up bluebird nest boxes, that made a huge difference in the numbers of bluebirds. I remember growing up and people talking about not seeing bluebirds, and that's because they simply weren't around. But ever since people been putting up smart houses for bluebirds, it worked, and the bluebird numbers are now very healthy. And when we get a chance, I'll mention some bluebird programs that are coming up that people can learn about and help the bluebirds along.
Go ahead. Do it now there, brother.
Okay. I'm going to say all about bluebirds, especially for kids, will be at the Crawford Library in Monticello, New York, on March 8th at 11 o'clock. You can find the details by looking for SullivanAudubon.org, SullivanAudubon.org.
Okay.
And there's more. Wait.
Okay.
In the Southern Adirondack Audubon Society at Saratoga Springs Library on March the 26th, John Rogers, who's the co-founder of the New York State Bluebird Society, will be doing a program on bluebirds up there. So that's a good two good opportunities to learn more about bluebirds and how you can help. You can also check the New York State Bluebird Society website for more information.
All right. You have more?
Oh, I do. But these are field trips and outings for people to start spring right.
Okay.
And I'll go through that and quickly here. There's a few. Spring is sprung and people are starting. March 9th, 8 a.m., early spring at the Roundout, register with the John Burroughs Natural History Society, jbnhs.org. And then on March 9th, the Basher Kill at 9 o'clock in the morning with the Orange County Audubon Society.org.
All right.
March 9th, the Basher Kill. The Waterman Bird Club.org on March 8th will be doing the Empire Rail Trail in Stormville, New York. Check their website, WatermanBirdClub.org. Sundays from 10 a.m. to noon, the Sawmill River Audubon.org. will be doing feeder watch at the Croton Point Nature Center. It's free, open to the public. Just show up. Audubon, Sawmill River Audubon at Croton Point Nature Center.
Excellent.
And a couple more. We'll make it quick here.
Okay.
Allen Bird Club in Hadley, Massachusetts will be doing a Canal Park Walk March 8th for ducks and such. Check Allen, A-L-L-E-N, birdclub.org for details. And at March 15th, they'll be going to the Stebbins Refuge in Longmeadow, Massachusetts. Again, check their website. And one more thing. The Delaware Otsego Audubon Society is doing free bird-friendly windows workshops. We hear about the mortality rate of birds striking windows. Here's how you can help. They'll be on March 22nd at the Sydney, New York, March 29th at Oneonta, and future venues in Cobleskill, Milford, and Delhi, New York. And that's at doas.org, Delaware Otsego Audubon Society.
Okay.
Thank you, Ray, for those.
You got it, man. Rich Guthrie's our guest today. It's birds, 800-348-2551. We have a ton of email here, but Jeff in Amsterdam's been waiting about 20 minutes. So, Jeff, it's all yours, buddy. Go ahead.
Thank you.
Hey, thanks, Ray. This is going to be the Bluebird Show because I called about bluebirds, but I did want to say that I haven't seen any red wings yet, but the robins have been back for 2 weeks already at our place. We've also had a flock of bluebirds that we've seen every month through the winter. They're now eating our suet, and I've never seen flocks of bluebirds. I mean, it's a small flock, maybe 7 to 10 birds. But we've seen them every month, and they, like I said, they're feeding the suet. I'm curious as to whether bluebirds are starting to winter over here, and why I would see a flock of bluebirds in January or February out in the fields or now at the feeders.
Well, to answer your question, both bluebirds and robins really do not leave our area for the winter. Many of them do spend the winter here. The issue is the numbers available to be seen. The more bluebirds, the greater the chances that you'll see some. They also choose a good habitat where there's a shelter and a reliable food supply. That's not always going to be the same place from year to year, but when it does happen, they'll be very faithful to that until it begins to fail them. Then they'll search for another spot. So it sounds like a local family group, extended family group of bluebirds found your place. And with luck, with good management, they'll be back again this year, next year, and perhaps down the line.
Jeff.
No, that's great news. I do have a bluebird trail with 12 boxes. I've never
Excellent.
Really found that they seem to be very productive. That's what my conclusion was, too. This is a family group, and they came back, or they're staying here. And maybe suet is a, if we're feeding suet, it's a reliable food supply. Is that correct?
Yeah, it is. It's a very healthy nutritious energy-producing food supply. The thing about that is the bluebirds have to learn about it. It's not a natural instinct for them to go tackle a suet block. They have to experience it, learn about it, and then they learn from one another, and they share that information. So it's a learning curve. Once they're on it, they got it, and you got them.
Jeff, thanks for the call. How do they actually transmit the information from one bird to the next?
Oh, they just look over each other's shoulder. And you know, birds always on the lookout for an easy meal. And if they see somebody chowing down, they're in.
Yeah, well, we've been doing this show for decades. What is suet again? I should know, but what is it?
Well, suet is basically beef fat, usually fat that is along the kidney of the beef. And it's always, well, back in the day, it used to be a discarded byproduct of butchering. But nowadays, and now that people have learned that it's a good food source for birds, the suppliers have learned that it's a good source for income. So what used to be free now tends to be a little bit expensive. And I watched the price go up over the few years, and I said, oh, my gosh, you should get this for free.
Well, it may go up again, Rich. I mean, you know, now that RFK Jr. says use the beef fat in the French fries, you're going to have more people eating that stuff. And then you birders are going to have some, they're going to have to pay out, you know, making birds healthy again, you know?
I know. Well, beef suet has always been a wonderful food source supplement for overwintering birds. And the best source, of course, is natural foods such as berries and seeds that you can grow on your property, specifically targeted for the benefit of birds. And those plants are out there. You might start thinking about that this time of year.
You know, when I was out last Saturday out in the backyard watching the geese, I didn't get dive bombed by one, but a blue jay came good and close. He was checking out the neighborhood. They're here all year, though, right?
Yes, they are. And what's interesting about blue jays is that we have our resident group of blue jays, but further north, those blue jays are migratory, and they don't migrate to here. They migrate over here. So we're kind of like the flyover state for a lot of bluebirds coming down out of Canada and heading further south to New Jersey, Pennsylvania, Virginia. And it's interesting to watch them go by. They are more likely a treetop migrant, just over the tops of the trees, hopping from tree to tree and moving on. Fun to watch as they go by.
I'm a big fan of the Blue Jays and the Crows. They're my favorites. All right, let's go back to the phones with Rich Guthrie. It's birds today. We'll check the email bag in a little bit, but Rodney and Rhinebeck has been waiting a while as well. Rodney, go ahead.
Oh, boy. Hey, Rich and Ray, hi. Thank you guys for taking my call.
You bet.
Rich, thank you very much for pointing out the true harbinger of springs bird-wise with birdwings and peewees and such. Mm-hmm. And, black poles weigh approximately 12 to 17 grams, just for the record. And my question, Rich, is, do you know about the Black Vulture Relief Act, H.R. 1437, from last year?
Black Vulture Relief Act? I don't know about this
Congress.
One. All right, so what is the deal?
Oh, geez.
Well,
they're you know, it's giving livestock people the right to kill black vultures because they're damaging livestock. Now, I've worked in Costa Rica, Belize, and Panama, and I grew up on a farm in Pennsylvania, and I live in the Hudson Valley. I don't know any farmer with livestock, including my family back in Pennsylvania with lots of cows, that have had an issue. Because Rich and I have been here watching the black vulture thing because we've been birding probably just about as long as each other. We watch them migrate north, or come north, not migrate north, extend their range north.
Yeah.
So, Rich, are you hearing anything about this from livestock people?
I have not. It's very curious. And black vultures are the newcomer to the area. They are just recently moved in the last decade or so. Their effect on livestock, I haven't witnessed any kind of deleterious effect. I know some places the black vultures are gregarious and can come in yes. huge numbers, but I don't know that they pose a threat to any livestock. I don't know what's behind that.
It was introduced by a fellow from Tennessee last year, got passed in June.
Yeah.
And I was very quizzy about that because, you know, I grew up in the Poconos in farmland.
Yeah.
And was there when they started coming in, you know, started expanding the range around 25 years ago. And I never saw them. Yeah, they're going to be around livestock and animals on your farm, but I've never seen them engage.
So the vultures engage with the cows? They annoy them, or do they hurt them?
For a lot of stuff, and I don't understand it.
Okay. Well, Rich, I guess we'll do some research on that one, and maybe we'll have more to say on the next show, Rodney.
Right.
Thanks a lot, man. 800-348-2551. That's the number. It's Birds with Rich Guthrie. Let's dispense with a few emails here, Rich. Several have come in as we've been chatting amiably here on the program. Glena writes in, Grackles and red-winged blackbirds is the subject heading. I've noticed that the red-winged blackbirds and grackles travel together. I've also noticed young grackles traveling with them. Any comments on that?
Well, yes. Blackbirds as a group mix and match in their flocks. A large flock of blackbirds can consist of three or four, maybe even five different species. So it's not uncommon to see them merge together. But then when the time comes, they'll separate, they'll part company and go about their individual ways. But during migration, sure, and overwintering, blackbirds are gregarious and birds of a feather do stick together, but they like to share.
All right. This one's from Julie in lovely Highland, New York. You ever been to Highland, New York, Rich?
No, sounds lovely.
It's a lovely place. Julie writes, thanks for taking this burning question of mine. For the past several weeks, from time to time, a group of not one, not two, but yes, five pairs of red cardinals have been visiting my feeding station. I offer both suet and a variety of seeds, fruits, and nuts, and there are several common types of birds that visit. Still, it seems to be very unusual to see so many males in particular tolerating one another. Any comments on that? And that's from Julie in Highland.
Well, it sounds to me like maybe they've been reading the news and they're forming a college get-together
by now. College
of
Cardinals, I see. That's very hilarious. Do you have any real answers?
Cardinals in the wintertime are gregarious. During the breeding season, they're very territorial and don't tolerate any nearby competition. But during the winter, they gather in sometimes, well, never large, but medium groupings, a dozen and sometimes 15, 20 cardinals, males and females, will actively stay together, feed together, and get along well together. But then come May and June, it's all different set of rules.
Okay.
We like you, but you're not welcome here.
Ouch. All right. One more email, then we'll hit the break, and then we'll go back to the phones. 800-348-2551. If you want to talk to Rich Guthrie, Cindy and Vic in West Springfield, Mass. write, what's the likelihood of our backyard birds and our bird feeders having contact with bird flu here in Western Mass? How would we know? And is there any danger of us handling bird feeders? Thanks for being informative and interesting. And that's from Cindy and Vic in West Springfield.
Well, thanks. That's a very important question right now. Avian flu is a serious threat to our bird population. But I just checked with Cornell Lab of Ornithology and the Department of Agriculture to the extent that the latter is still functioning. I can say that their advice is don't worry about it. Well, yeah, worry about it, but don't be concerned at the moment. Be vigilant and report any suspicious mortalities in the respective areas. The mortalities in avian flu tend to have been occurring in waterfowl, poultry, and unfortunately as well with raptors, eagles, peregrine falcons, and some of the other hawks. But the bottom line is that backyard bird feeding, so far the consensus of opinion is that it is okay to continue feeding backyard birds as long as you don't have a domestic flock of chickens in your yard or neighborhood.
Right.
That said, there are a number of reporting sites that you can let the authorities know if you have suspicious bird mortalities in the area. And I will say that New York State DEC has a website where you can report suspicious bird sightings, as does Massachusetts, Connecticut, and Vermont. Their respective states, if you Google a search, let's say Connecticut avian flu reporting, you'll find a place where you can enter data, including a location of suspected mortalities. But bottom line, backyard bird feeders continue feeding the birds, according to Cornell Lab of Ornithology and U.S. Department of Agriculture to the extent that they're functioning.
All right, Rich, we have 30 seconds before the next break, so we'll squeeze one more email in here. This is from Ken in Ballston Lake. We have a bird bath in our yard. We've noticed that a wide array of birds are drinking from it, so much so that we refill it twice a day. On average, how much water do birds need on a daily basis, or is it dependent upon species and size? And then we'll take a break and go back to the folks.
Yeah, a lot depends. Yeah. Species, size, and their activity level. So it will vary according with temperature and other, a lot of other factors. And to answer your question, I don't know.
Okay. Let's take a break. Rich Guthrie's our guest. 800-348-2551 is the number. Boyd's today. We'll be back to the phones in a moment. The late, great Bill Watrous on the trombone there. 800-348-2551. It's Rich Guthrie and birds today on the show. And let's go back to our phones. We'll go to Tyler, Connecticut. Ben, you're on.
Hey, guys. I was calling about bluebirds.
Cool.
And I've had a lot of luck. I probably have 14 to 20 bluebirds that come to my feeders, and I feed them something called peanut dough. Or if you were to Google it, it's called like Peanut Delight. But instead of beef suet, it's primarily made with peanuts. And I have seen, I have two different, I have a bird feeder that looks like a house and it has cages on the sides. And if I switch the beef suet ones to one side, the bluebirds just don't even eat it at all.
No
they
way.
Go for. Yeah, oh, they go for the peanut dough like crazy. And then I also have one of the feeders that you put right on your windows. And I've recently bought, it's called Bird Peanuts. And they come in a big bag for like 10 bucks. And you put those right on your window. And the bluebirds, I mean, you count like 10 or 12 of them, like all the time.
Wow. Hey, where can you get this peanut dough? It sounds delicious.
No, I know we can't say like certain names and things like that, but they're available at any of the big box stores.
Rich, let's get some for after the show.
And so, I mean, I'll go even farther to tell you that it's $8 for
okay,
10.
Okay, no, well, we can't really do that. We can't really do prices
okay,
here on public radio or else somebody will be very upset. And it'll
yeah.
be
now, the other thing for you guys is I've found that bluebirds are like secondary feeders so that the woodpeckers and the blue jays will come first, and then my bluebirds will come after.
Okay, well, it's a lot to unpack.
I agree with you there.
Go
yeah,
ahead,
they
Rich.
They seem to take the slow start on that. And the other thing I liked, I've fed bluebirds in the past was mealworms. But again, it's a matter of their discovery. Once they find it, then you got them. Yeah. But until they find it, it's going to be hit or miss. They'll look at it, not recognize it, and move on. So good for you for having them latch on.
Yeah, so look for the peanut dough.
Okay.
I literally put that into the search, and it comes up like a box of whatever it is. So, and I'll call you guys later in the spring about the Orioles. But I love bluebirds, and. And boy, do they stick around. I probably got, 14 to 20 of them. So
cool.
I hope that gives some other people some luck, and I listen all the time.
Hey, man, thanks for the call. Appreciate it very much. So, Rich, have you tried the peanut dough before?
I have not, and it's on my list.
You just get it in a block and just chow it, right? I could take that to work with
me. Yeah, right.
Mm, delicious. All right, let's go to Millbrook, New York. Susan, you're on.
Hi, I love bluebirds too. I'm calling, I had one bluebird question. Last year, I had a bluebird that kept attacking my window of my house, would just put its little feet on the screens and would just, and I don't know why, it would keep coming back to this window. I don't know if it was seeing its reflection. Wonder what you think about that.
Birds are pretty dumb, right, Rich?
No.
Well, they're not dumb, but they certainly are instinctive.
Okay.
And I think you're right. It probably is seeing its own reflection and thinking it's a rival bluebird and trying to drive it off. That happens with other birds, robins and cardinals and the like. Not so much with bluebirds. It's interesting to hear your instance, but again, that's usually the case. But I'm a little surprised because the screen usually deters them from doing that. So, you got a tenacious bluebird on your hands.
and dirty windows. My real question, though, and I'm so excited that you're here today, is that I took a walk on Sunday, and there's a little pond across the street from me, and I was looking through the brush. Unfortunately, I didn't have my binoculars with me. But I saw kind of a papaya-shaped blob on the tree, and I thought, that's an odd shape for a nest, you know, this is just scrubby stuff, like honeysuckle or something. And I kept looking at it, and finally it moved a little bit, and it flew off and into the cavity of a tree, which I couldn't get to. But I think, you know, when these things happen quickly, I'm pretty sure I saw tufts. So I'm wondering if there's a possibility it could have been a saw-whet, or if it would likely be a eastern screech owl.
What do you think, Rich?
I'm going to go with the screech owl, and good for you. Screech owls can be active during the daytime, but they much prefer to be in a cavity of a tree that you can't get to, for sure. The little saw-whet owl, they don't have tufts on their head, and they're more likely to stay put and pretend that you can't see them. And most of the time, they're right.
Well, this one stayed put for a long time, and then I thought, but would the tufts of the screech owl, would they go flat?
Yes.
I mean, when he flew off, it happened pretty quickly, but I'm pretty sure I saw tufts.
Yes.
I tried then to turn on my Merlin sounds, and that didn't seem to do anything, to see if it might answer back or, you know, leave the tree.
Right.
But this was midday. This was like 2 o'clock in the afternoon, 1:30, 2 o'clock in the afternoon.
Hmm. Yes, okay. Well, it sounds like a screech owl.
Okay.
And I might say that using Merlin sounds this time of year, it becomes a little bit problematic because the sounds are these birds' indication that it's on territory. And if it encounters a stronger sound, your Merlin reproduction or some other audio amplification, they may give up their territory.
Okay. Sorry.
When is it okay for Susan?
The same home? Like, can I go back and try to? This tree is on a neighbor's property, so I'm not sure. But I'm wondering, do they usually stay there?
Yes. And here's a trick: if you go out on a sunny, cold, sunny day and look at that hole, you might see the owl sitting out there, just soaking up some sun. They will frequently do that during the daytime. And again, they'll pretend that you can't see them, and like I say, they're usually right.
All right, Susan, thanks for the call. Interesting point you made, Rich, about timing of using things like the Merlin Bird app.
Mm-hmm.
When is a good time for Susan to use it?
Well, it probably will be okay now, but at some point, when the birds have become territorial and the male bird is singing, defending its territory, that's the time not to use it. My admonition is always let the little guy win.
Okay.
There are places where those things are prohibited because there's so much attention to, let's say, a rare bird species that they don't want any playbacks at all. But during the off season, when it really doesn't have any territorial effect on the birds, it's not a big problem.
I mean, this is sort of a gentleman's agreement, right? In other words, you have to know enough not to use it, right? Who's going to police that?
Oh, totally, totally. I mean, it's a matter of ethics, birding ethics and the like.
Okay.
There are legitimate uses for it. When you're doing bird surveys, you do want to. But then again, stop, and move on. Don't persist. And if it's a place where there's going to be somebody right behind you doing the same thing, that's another start. So, yeah, it's a very useful, interesting tool. But it has to be done with understanding and moderation.
Rich Guthrie is our guest today. Julie Hart will be back with us next month. It's Birds Today, 800-348-2551. Rich, while we have a few moments here, let's grab some of the many emails that have come in. This is from Donna, subject heading Bluebirds and Cardinals. And Donna writes, this year, for the first time, I've been feeding the birds using four different feeders with various seed mixes and two suet feeders. It's obvious different species prefer not only different food, but also different styles of feeders. My bluebirds, many of them, eat almost exclusively at the tray feeder and seem to love the food mixture containing the hot stuff that is supposed to repel the squirrels. However, the tray feeder design invites the squirrels, and the sizzle product seems to be readily consumed by them. Is there any such thing as a tray feeder that is squirrel-proof? I'd like to prevent the squirrels from eating the expensive food that is the preferred bluebird food.
Well, there are a couple of measures you can take. Number one is to make it out of reach of the squirrels, either dangling it from a limb on a tree or on a pole with squirrel baffles on the pole stalk. Two ways to keep the squirrels from getting at the feeder itself. Once they're there, they're going to gobble up everything and wreck it for everybody. Measures to keep the squirrels away are the first line of defense.
All right. This is from Holly in Wagontown, Pennsylvania. I have feeders, suet cakes, snack stacks at two areas of my yard. A large metal pole barn separates the two areas. The one side, which is more traveled by people and carols, I see a greater variety of birds. Cardinals, woodpeckers, blue jays, finches, starlings, cowbirds, blackbirds, bluebirds, etc. The feeders on the other side, which butts up against an open field, really only get starlings and sometimes finches when the starlings don't bully them away. Why am I seeing the greater variety at one side of the yard and not on both sides? Also, what deters starlings? They are bullies and scare off the others. And that's from Holly in Wagontown, Pennsylvania.
I love the place, Wagontown. Wow.
Yeah, buddy.
So, location. And it probably has to do with what the birds perceive as a safe place. When they're feeding, they're very vulnerable because their attention is diverted from defense to this other activity. And so where there is a nearby shelter, trees, shrubs, cover is always more desirable. Out in the open field is less desirable, but when it comes to food, they got to do what they got to do. Now, when it comes to starlings, it's a matter of the type of food that's available to them. And unfortunately, they'll gobble up almost anything you put out. So I don't have any real good strong advice other than to say if they're on the side with the of the fields, then put the cheap stuff out there, the cracked corn and that kind of bird seed out where the starlings can feast away and leave the good stuff for the little guys.
All right, this is from Jerry in Gilderland. My cousin Judy in Chicago has never seen a bluebird in the Midwest. Is it possible that they haven't spread to the Midwest? And if not, why? Same weather. That's from Jerry in Gilderland.
Well, it's, same more or less latitude and all. And they should be out there. But, you know, the prairie states were always lacking in bluebirds because bluebirds are cavity nest builders. They'll nest in a hole in a tree. If you don't have a tree, there's not going to be a hole available.
Right.
So with windbreaks, and especially if people put up nesting boxes for bluebirds, that will make a big difference. And that's worked in many places in the Northeast. So I suspect that if an active bluebird trail program were initiated – in that area. There might be, and out there, you might get, you know, who knows, the western bluebird or the mountain bluebird right. coming east, as well as the eastern bluebird going west.
All right, this is from Cindy, and then we'll jump back on the phones, and then we'll probably have to wrap it. We have about 4 minutes here with Rich Guthrie. Cindy in Chatham writes, for the past 2 weeks, we've had two large red-tailed hawks sharing a branch in a tree by our house. One will spot prey in the field or take to the wing to fly over a neighboring field. But given a few minutes, it'll be back to rejoin its partner. They come back every day, multiple times per day. They're never alone for very long. Are they a newly mated pair nesting nearby? And that's from Cindy in Chatham.
Yes to that. What you have there is a bonded pair. And they are very faithful to not only to one another, but also to the spot where they have been hanging out. And there's probably a nest someplace in that close proximity.
Uh-huh.
And what they're doing is they're just hanging out together and holding on to that territory against all oncomers.
All right, let's go back to our phones. We'll go to Wurtsboro and Louise. Louise, you're on with Rich Guthrie. Go ahead.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I have a suggestion. I don't know where I learned it, but it works for me. To keep the squirrels away,
yeah.
on the stem of the bird feeder, I place Vaseline, and the squirrels
oh.
will not go.
Well, why did you
yeah,
say, oh, Rich?
TV.
Okay. Well, it's an effective measure to work against the squirrels, but it also can work against the birds if they brush up against it. And that residue on their feathers will reduce their ability to shed water and reduce their insulation value. So it's very important.
Oh.
I think that's probably, yeah, there are other alternatives I would go to instead of that. I mean, it does work
well,
for squirrels. I mean, and it's kind of humorous to watch the squirrels slip and slide. But the potential
yes.
effect,
yes,
and
so
deleterious
what if you don't
effect
put it
on the birds.
Go ahead, Louise.
Respectfully, what if you don't put it on the actual hand that comes out, you know, the stem? If you just put it on the stem underneath the hanging things, because the birds won't go on the pole, on the actual pole is what I'm saying.
Yeah, okay, that might work.
You know,
I would pay close attention, and if it's working, then all power to you. But just keep that advisory in mind. Good
thank
idea,
you.
Though.
Thank you very
hey,
much.
Louise, thanks
oh, thank
a lot
you.
For the call. Appreciate it. All right, we have about a minute here, Rich. I'll blast through a couple of emails. This one's from Nell, who says, I saw a hawk on a tree overlooking the New York State Thruway south of New Paltz. Profile was like a red tail, but with a very white belly and a very black head. Is that still a red tail? And that's from Nell.
Yes. And the theory is, and I believe it's true, is that as red tails get older and older, they become whiter below. In other words, they lose that dark belly band that they're so well known for. Very broad patch of dark belly band when they're young and reduced in size as they get older, sort of graying with age.
Yeah. Well, tell me about it. All right. Dominic in Cooperstown writes, and we'll have to answer this one fairly quickly. I have at my house, near my small orchard, a bluebird house and a wren house. When should I clean the houses out from last year's nesting material?
Right now.
Yeah?
Between now and middle of March, go for it. You got to evict those mice that moved in over the winter.
How do you know there's mice there?
Betcha there are.
All right. Rich Guthrie, how do people find you if they want to email you? I forwarded you one. One of our early respondents here on the show sent a picture. Wanted identification of a bird sitting on top of his on top of his garage. Very impressive bird. So I forwarded that to you. But how do people find you if they want to email?
Easy pickings. It's my name, Richard, middle initial P as in Peter, Guthrie, G-U-T-H-R-I-E, @gmail.com. Richard P. Guthrie @gmail.
All right, buddy. Hey, thanks for being with us. You're going to be back in this neck of the woods anytime soon.
You betcha. Keep that sun shining. I'll be back.
All right. Thanks, Rich. Support comes from the Arkell Museum at Canajoharie, presenting The Art of Seeing, prints by Beth Van Hosen. Exhibition extended through May 11th, arkellmuseum.org. And Vivo Institute for Effective Communication, bringing telehealth speech therapy to listeners with a whole-person approach, helping clients make lasting changes to their lives. InVivoInstitute.org for information. And Gardner Supply, stocked with seeds and supplies for the start of the Great expectations. Gardener Supply, stocked with seeds and supplies for the start of the gardening season. Garden centers in Vermont, New Hampshire, and Massachusetts. Online at gardeners.com for more. You know, I think about gardening and I get choked up. That's all there is to it. We'll be doing a gardening show soon, so stand by. I probably won't even be able to breathe by the end of it. Thanks to Mike Bowen, our engineer, Ed Rosen, our screener. I'm Ray Graff. Tomorrow, it's Travel with Gene Gagnon. We'll see you tomorrow at 2.